Savvy regards again and yet again to the staff of Nemeta, my noble and loyal friends. I'm here this evening, the depths of the night, winter evening in Spain, to record a little message that will be posted in Course 17, The Terma and the Turton. The title of this message is Commitment to Nemeta. Principally, this is a moment for me to talk about my commitment to the School of Sophianic Arts and Sciences. And you can, if you like, measure or assess your commitment relative to mine. Now, it would be appropriate, before I even start, to tell you that I consider that my commitment to Nemeta is complete. My commitment to Nemeta is plenary. Everything that I have lived now for what, these 74 years or whatever, is the proof of that commitment. So my life was committed to Nemeta the moment I was born, or at the moment I was conceived. It's probably more appropriate to say that. And likewise, your commitment to what you do in your own life, how you find your purpose, how you claim your humanity, and how you move on communicating and sharing with others, was also determined at the moment of your conception. And I want to make it clear that everything that you find in Nemeta, concretely, materially, manifestly, is proof of my commitment. And the fact that you give it your attention and support is proof of yours. So your commitment and mine are yoked together. They're coupled in a tantric fashion. So my commitment to Nemeta, if I didn't live to see the morning of this day, would still be complete. And it would continue, and does continue, whether I'm here or not. Right now, while I'm talking to you in this particular vein, I see the opportunity to make a distinction that I attempted to make in Quest for the Zodiac. I can take another shot at it right now, perhaps do a little better. Namely, I refer to the distinction that I made at the end of that book between destiny and fate. So what is your destiny? Well, it's to throw the dice that put you here, and the dice are thrown when you are conceived. Do you see that? And so your life unfolds, your life evolves, your life emerges as you find your way into your destiny, which is innate to you. As you find your way into your endowment. How do you discover that endowment? Your skill set, the unique set of tools, capacities, and talents that you have from the moment of your conception. It's a process of discovery and adventure. You know, destiny is part of the web of life. You find your destiny when you find your thread in the great weave of the dreaming of the Aeonic Mother, and that too is Tantra, because Tantra is the weave, the tapestry. Your fate is the external situation of circumstances in which you struggle to manifest your destiny. That's the difference between destiny and fate. Destiny is really, as the word says, something that comes from the stars, out of the throw of dice in the play of the cosmic aeons. And it is true, and I have proven it, and others prove it now and shall prove it in the years ahead, that your destiny, that is to say the endowment of you as a magical child, can be read in the code of the stars, in the celestial code. So the DOS, data operating system for the human animal, is written in that code. It is the source code of your destiny. But your fate is existential. Your fate is the situation in which you find yourself as you wander and explore your destiny. Your fate is composed of the external circumstances in which you can manifest it or not, the things that support it, things that support and assist you in fulfilling your destiny, and that which works against it. The totality of those circumstances that impact your destiny, that is your fate. So you learn to love your fate. By loving your fate, you have the best chance to fulfill your destiny. And it's not easy. It's not easy at moments to love your fate. But it's quite a kick, and it's quite a boost into the transcendental dimension of living when you can. So Amor Fati is the cry of Shaktas and Kalikas. I'll take this occasion too to tell you that I don't know, short of meeting you face to face, if you know how grateful I am that we share this fate now. We share the fate of the Aeonic Mother herself and her magical child. I don't say thank you very often. And in fact, I wouldn't know how to thank you for anything as immense as that. I assure you, it works the other way as well. I was sitting once in a cafe terrace in Gaussin, across from the gas station. Terrace drops off about 40 feet down to the municipal swimming pool. And you look out there to the Straits of Gibraltar and the mountains of Africa in the distance. And I sat there with an occasional social acquaintance. We were talking about my work. She had read Not in His Image. And she took pains at a certain moment, feeling somewhat uncomfortable in my presence, somewhat intimidated. She took pains to tell me that she was really, really grateful for what I had done, for instance, to restore the narrative. And I said to her, "Well, Aini," that was her name, Scandinavian woman. I said, "Well, Aini, you can't be grateful enough. No one can. So I want you also to know that that's exactly how I feel. But it's not personal. It's not a personal presumption. I can say that without arrogance, in recognition of the immensity of this destiny of mine and the fate we have together. Now, I'd like you to know that on a day-to-day basis, I'm pretty challenged by the whole situation. Now, on a typical day, I will come into the den of the bunker, as I call it, in Hag House. I call it Hag House because it's in a place, a tiny little hamlet, which has the name, a name derived from the Celtic root of fairy, F-A-E-R-I-E, and a fairy is a dakini, a supernatural witch, a frequency of the telluric force of the Aeonic Mother. But oddly, in the dialect of this little fairyland of Galicia, it means ugly or hag. So I call this fortress Hag House. And I sit here today, I come down here daily. And most every day I pick up this sheet of paper, which I have in front of me right now. And it has on it a list of 18 items. Now there is a zero. There's a zero and 1 through 18. And the zero at the top of this list is the Dragonfly Sutra. And the other 18 entries in the list, well, you know what they are, don't you? And every day that I come down and I look at this list of entries, I feel shocked. I'm literally shocked at what I'm looking at. And on some days, I just don't know where to go next. I really don't. But I will say that recently, I've come around a turn in the road. I'd like to describe to you exactly what that turn in the road means to me. Or I could as well say, what it means to me. The great cycle of the sky and planets is currently coming around to a 12-year rhythm. Cycle of the planet Jupiter is 12 years. So the term of Gaia Awakening happened in August of 2008, and so 2020 is the year of the 12th anniversary when Jupiter returns to the place in the constellation of the Archer where it was at that moment. Now, I didn't expect to receive the term of Gaia Awakening. I've said this before. In one sense, my entire life prepared me for it. My life as a Turton. You know, there's a legend in planetary folklore for you. But another way, actually, honestly, I mean, I was totally unprepared for the immensity of it. And what has come through on the momentum of the terma has always astounded me. There have been moments when I had to say, I had to ask, I had to wonder, how long is this going to continue? How long is this prodigious outpouring going to continue? How much more can I deliver? How much more can I handle? Already, when the terma happened, in that instant was more than I could handle. And then it just erupted from there. But I can tell you now that there is a limit, and there is a place in my experience as a teacher where I reach total and profound saturation. And I have reached that point. The Dragonfly Sutra didn't exactly happen on July 1st, 2019, the last day of the Idris shift. Remember, Idris is my guardian. Kali is my life guardian. But Idris is the guardian of my destiny, you could say. My personal muse. Language is my mistress. Language is my muse. And so I composed the Dragonfly Sutra. I composed it. It did not come as a terma. It's not a terma. It's the jewel ornament of the terma. It's as if I used some ancient techniques that the Egyptians used. Go and look at the cloisonné of Egyptian art. For instance, the utchat, the eye of Horus, or the scarab. Go look at the regalia worn by Nefertiti and other elegant Egyptians of noble lineage. And you see there the cloisonné, which is an engraving of enamel, some kind of substance of enamel, which I suppose is a paste, or there may be carved pieces of turquoise and lapis lazuli that are fitted into a mold of pure gold, and precious jewels are embedded, for instance, in the silhouette of the scarab. And imagine that I had the artisan skills to make something like that, which would be a brooch for an Egyptian princess. I was an Egyptian princess once. I was two, actually, at the same time. I remember being that, which doesn't mean that when I was that, I was the same entity as I am now. So imagine the beautiful ornament of an Egyptian princess. The Dragonfly Sutra is like that. It is the jewel ornament of liberation. And so when I composed the Dragonfly Sutra, which I did almost thoughtlessly, not entirely, I, like someone playing on a guitar, I got the song, I got the chords, and I played with them a little to get it just right, but very, very little. When I did that, it was the culminating act of my entire life work. And so now the Dragonfly Sutra sits on this work. It sits on the body of the goddess as a jewel ornament. And whenever I look at that ornament, whenever I remind myself of it, I breathe a huge sigh of relief, because I know that there is nothing else required of me, and I have reached total saturation. Among the many outrageous claims that I've made about myself and what I do, I'd like you to remind you of the theme of originality. Originality is the evidence of mastery of the non plus ultra. So whoever has that mastery has the ultimate prize that the Aeonic Mother herself wishes for her magical children. And she wishes it for all of her magical children, but that does not mean she wishes it for all of humanity or all of the specimens of the human animal who live and breathe at any one time. Certainly not. She wishes it for those who recognize that she is their mother and who know from whence they come. I am a child of the earth and the starry heavens, but my origins are in heaven alone. You yourself know this. That's the Vitalia omelet, remember? What the mother wishes is to have the recognition from her children that she is mother. And where that recognition is given, there is a sacred bond. And those who give that recognition can follow their destiny into the highest mastery. The highest mastery of all the gifts of the Anthropos is the NPU, the non plus ultra. And that is the power of description. So what does the Dragonfly Sutra do? It describes the way a dragonfly flies. In 11 lines and 55 words. So that composition marks a place in my life. It marks a place on the path of my experience, unlike any other. So from the moment of composing the Dragonfly Sutra, the way that I regard my work as a teacher, if you want to call it work, has permanently changed. Now you're going to see the reflection of this change in the way that I handle the curriculum of Nimitta. In the first place, be clear about this part of my commitment. It's my commitment to build the structure of Nimitta as it is conceived to be. the main activity, the primary day-to-day task, is to construct blocks, to put the pre-existing material into blocks. The density, the originality of this material requires that it be dosed in a certain way. So the courses are a way to dose it, and the blocks within the courses are a way to dose the doses. So you can count on me that I will continue to put blocks on Nemata and to build the school and structure the courses in that way. You can also count on me to provide some original material that would be, say, current commentary in Course 18, Breaking Noose. So of course, when I report on Dakini shifts, when I comment on the current planetary and lunar cycles, this is going to be original material. It's simply reportage coming from the weatherman who's riding the front. He's in the front of the weather. And that will be original material. But apart from that original material, the only other original material to be presented on Nemata will be through the Dragonfly Sutra and expositions and commentaries connected to the sutra. That's the limit. I've reached the limit of the originality that I can produce. And that's a really good thing, because if any more of it came through the system, I would probably collapse. And there are days when I feel like I'm close to collapsing. So it's been a great change for me, and it's been a huge relief to have reached this point. I want you to be eye to eye with me, gnosis to gnosis, children with our gnosis right up against the window pane of the wonderful panorama of Sophia's dreaming. You're in the avant-garde of the planet. You're in the avant-garde of the intelligent sensibility of the Anthropos. And I'm right there with you. And now that a limit has been set, I have confidence I didn't have before. I'm getting used to it anyway. It's new. I have a certain confidence, I have a certain poise and serenity that I've longed for. Knowing that there's not anything more going to be demanded of me, you know, to put it in very crude terms, that the demands upon me are different now. And I can face them day to day in a different way. And every day, moment by moment, I'm feeling that difference. I have to say, be honest, I'm still shocked and overwhelmed often. I'll give an example. sitting here right now, recording on the middle screen. Up above me to the left is the first screen, which has Nemata on it, has the site up on the home page. And on the third screen on the right is a text in progress. This text is the manual for the Kali Dice Oracle. Now, Kali Dice Oracle is a feat. it is a manual of for divination and communication in the insanity of Kali Yuga. And the Kali Dice Oracle came in the kit with the terma. It's an accessory. You know, like when you buy a car, you can ask for certain accessories. And there are quite a few accessories that came with the terma. So the Kali Dice Oracle has been floating around now for almost 12 years. Bringing out the Kali Dice Oracle as an actual artifact and a product that can be sold on the internet is one of the projects of the school. So it's a project of Terma Publishing. I would like to see it sold through the school. And there's a way that it can be sold in franchises so that different members of the school can actually produce the Kali Dice Oracle where they are locally and sell it and take their cut of it. So it's one of the commercial projects of the school, along with various books. So the Kali Dice Oracle is based on 21 throws of two dice. These are the special dice of Kali, which only have four pips. 4, 3, 2, 1. Now, as a die has six sides, then there must be something on the remaining two sides. So in its current design, there is an R and a G. So if you combine the R and the G with the four pips, you get 21 throws. And each of these 21 throws has what might be called, what shall I call it? An operative meme. It has a working phrase. So there's a short phrase for each of the throws. And then there is a short exposition called the advisory, which elaborates on the meaning of that phrase. And then additional to that, there is a short paragraph of topics and themes which are appropriate and specific to that particular throw of the dice. For instance, since I've got the text right here in front of me on the big screen, the third screen, as an example, if you get the throw of 2 plus 3, then the operative meme goes like this. The delight shared gathers the light of vitality. The delight shared gathers the light of vitality. That's the phrase for one of the 21 throws. And then following that, as I say, in the manual, there will be a paragraph of under 500 words, perhaps around 350, which is the advisory on that phrase. And then there will be an even shorter paragraph, around 250 words, of the topics and themes to be discussed or considered if you get that throw. And that's how the manual works. And each throw will probably occupy, in the design of the book, one page of the manual. Can you see that? So if you get the throw, you open up the manual, and there you will have on one page, right or left, you'll have the complete material that advises you how to proceed with that throw. So, this hasn't been written yet. This content hasn't been written yet. The signature phrases, the operative memes, are there. I wrote them down in an afternoon. Wrote them down in some hour or so in Gaussin many years ago, spontaneously, without even thinking about it. Kali Dice Oracle is an accessory that came in the toolkit of Gayan Tantric practices that came with the Terma of Gaia Awakening. So here I am today, 12 years later, and I'm facing the task to write the manual, because the manual is not yet written. The structure of the oracle is decided. The introductory chapter is written. Some of the material that will be in the little manual is written. But the advisory and the themes and topics for each throw have not been written. How do you suppose I'm going to do that? How can I do that? Well, up until recently, I didn't know if I would ever be able to do that, if I would be able, ever be able, or would have the occasion in the right moment and the right conditions to go back and complete the Kali Dice Oracle. But now that my commitment is completed, I can do it. At least I can undertake doing it. What allows me to do it is knowing that I'm not going to get more to do. Just pay attention to what's already there. Propagate the Dragonfly Sutra, and that will entail original writing, original expression, and that's it. I'm not going to have anything else loaded into me. So I have come to this point. Not a second too soon, I can assure you of that. In fact, in many ways, it's way, way, way too late. I would venture to say that if all of this wonderment were operating strictly on human terms, it would really be too late. But that's not the case. This wonderment by which the Terma of Gaia Awakening comes into the world, and the sacred narrative of the Aeon Sophia becomes accessible, is not merely a personal affair. It is also transpersonal, and there are supernatural forces at play here. I will say, however, that I struggle less and less, but I still struggle somewhat with the human limitations. Take, for instance, the Dragonfly Sutra. The Dragonfly Sutra places me in the world in a position to completely overtake the entirety of Buddhist wisdom that has ever been expounded on this planet. To take it down and to overtake it and to make it over, which I do to some extent by picking pearls out of the rubble once in a while. I was saying today to Kerdwin that I want to make a public statement expressing my profound gratitude to the entire tradition of Buddhism and Asiatic mysticism, including the Vedas and all the various schools of Vedic and Indian philosophy, and all the various branches and denominations of Buddhism, from the Hinayana to the Mahayana, the Vajrayana, the Dzogchen, not to mention the Chan and Zen traditions, and all those who have upheld those traditions, and even to those who are still living today, parading around in their robes, the Dalai Lama included. I want to make a public statement of my immense gratitude to them for holding that ground until the moment when I could come here and claim it. I want to express my gratitude to them, including the Buddhists living today, whoever the lamas, Rinpoches may be, including the presumed Indian gurus, and I think there are some Indian gurus living who are presumed to have attained samadhi and to be speaking from the ultimate state of self-realization. You can listen to them on the internet. I want to express my gratitude to them for what I am now about to demolish. And certainly, if they hadn't held that tradition up, then there wouldn't be anything for me to demolish, would there? And when I make that statement, you can be sure that I will express specific gratitude to two individuals, one of whom I met and one I didn't. The one I met was Dzogchen Rinpoche, who was the last great master and supreme Vijayadhara of the Nyingma tradition. And when I met him for half an hour in Santa Fe on a beautiful fall day, probably in 1984 or 85, he conferred on me by what is called mind mandate transmission the entirety of all the practices and principles of Nyingma Tibetan Buddhism as a gift with no obligation, because I asked him a joke. If a fool and a wise man have a conversation, who learns the most? And he liked this joke so much that he gave me the entire treasure of Nyingma, including the Terma tradition and all the Termas, to do with as I wish and to turn it into anything I like, including raspberry vanilla ice cream.